This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this special edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld. Today, we take a look back at a recent FRC lecture titled Promoting Religious Liberty in Your Public Schools. There's no question that the public school system is under attack from the secular left, and now more than ever, we must know what's at stake. Can students read their Bibles in public schools? Can they express their faith in a school assignment? Can they share about Jesus during the Christmas season? Can they perform Christmas music in a public school talent show? Today on Washington Watch, we'll get all of those questions answered as we listen to the president of Gateways to a Better Education, Eric Buehrer. Let's listen in now.
Promoting religious liberties in public schools. You know, a lot of people within the Christian community feel like, well, public schools, they're a lost cause. We should be promoting homeschooling. We should be promoting private schools. What can we do to impact public schools, and why should we care? And I'd like to address that with a few interesting facts of why we should care. First of all, according to Barna's research, Barna Group's polling research found that 84% of church-attending families send their children to public schools. 84%. In my own experience, I found that even churches that might host a Christian school on their campus, still probably half of the students in that church attend the local public schools. Another reason we should care is because that's where the future generation is being educated. 50 million children attend public schools. Only 6 million are in private schools. And if you drill down that even further, those schools that could be classified as conservative Christian, well under a million students. So the vast majority of the next generation of Americans are coming from the public schools. Another reason we should care is that, again, according to Barna's research, nearly 50% of public school educators are church-attending Christians who say that their faith is important in their lives. Now, folks, that's about 1.5 million educators in our public schools. In fact, one of the operating principles of our work is that there are Christians in every public school classroom. Our schools are filled with Christian superintendents, Christian school board members, Christian administrators, Christian educators, and of course, Christian parents and teachers. We often in the Christian community look at the public schools as an us versus them sort of mentality. But the aha moment for me years ago was realizing it's not us versus them. We are them. We're the teachers. We're the administrators. We're the superintendents. But so often, we don't know how to appropriately promote religious liberty in our schools, how to appropriately integrate teaching about the Bible and Christianity and its influence with academic integrity. And so we say nothing. And what our organization does is equip those Christians within the system with what they can do within existing law and with academic integrity. And the other reason we should care is that this generation of young people need to understand and cherish religious liberty. You know, we're moving today into a climate where oftentimes we look at religious freedom really being freedom to worship. Well, you can believe what you want as long as it's in your own home or in the four walls of your church. But living it out in public, not too sure about that anymore. Well, if we want this generation to grow up to cherish religious liberty, let's not just treat it as a civics lesson. Let's actually help them live it out in their world, which is the public school campus, and how to do that appropriately. You know, is it any wonder that today, when you go into a store during the Christmas season or even in private businesses, people are hesitant to say Merry Christmas? Somehow they think that that's inappropriate. Is it any wonder because that generation of employees grew up in a world, kindergarten through 12th grade, where they were conditioned to believe that saying Merry Christmas was inappropriate? It was somehow a violation of the separation of church and state. And so then they carry that into their adult life, and that's what we have today. So why don't we then reverse that by saying, let's help those students understand what their religious liberties are and actually live it out in the world in which they occupy in their public schools, so that it's more than just an intellectual exercise in a civics class, but they're actually living their religious freedom. What we do as an organization is we focus on two key things: academic freedom and religious freedom. The academic freedom to teach about Christian history, culture, and values across the curriculum, and the religious freedom, promoting and protecting students' freedom of religious expression. Now, we show educators how to do this all within existing laws and existing academic standards. I tell educators all the time when we do our seminars around the country, I'm not asking you to smuggle Bibles into a closed country. This is not about doing something sneaky that no one will know. What we teach educators to do, they can defend to any colleague, any parent, any superintendent, any school board, because it's all within existing laws and with academic integrity. The problem is, I find that a lot of Christian teachers lead with their Christian hearts, not their Christian head. They have a real passion for their students, but they oftentimes, that passion gets in the way of good academics. And so we help them understand how to do this academically, legally, within state academic guidelines. Now, the way that we deliver this message are three primary ways. One is through professional development seminars that we do around the country for educators. Most often, this is the church community inviting us to come in, because as we saw before, 84% of their children are attending those public schools. A lot of the pastors in the church community want to make sure that the public schools understand how to appropriately be responsive to that large segment of their public school population. So churches will often host us coming in and doing workshops for both parents and teachers. Then we have a university program in which we help educate up-and-coming teachers, student teachers, on all the things they can do once they enter the profession. Because oftentimes, a rookie teacher will come in and be told by a veteran teacher, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, and they just assume that they must be right, and so that's what they do, and they begin to live as if they have to be an atheist at a public school. I can be a Christian on the evenings and weekends, but when I walk into that classroom, I have to pretend I'm an atheist, teach like I'm an atheist, act like an atheist, I can't talk about God, God's not welcome here. And so we show them how they can do that once they enter the profession. And then third, we create educational materials to equip both the teacher and the parent with what can happen in public schools and how to do that appropriately. A founding principle of our organization can be found from our founding fathers, from the Northwest Ordinance of 1787. Now, I'll put my history teacher hat on for a moment. The Northwest Ordinance was a document developed to govern territory northwest of the Ohio River. It had not yet become states, but the United States had acquired it. And so they put together this document. And in it, they addressed schools and why schools are so important. Here's what they said: religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. Interesting. They said there's a three-legged stool. We just created this great government, and in order to sustain it, to perpetuate it, you need to have three things: religion, morality, and knowledge. And that's why schools are so important. But what we've done today is, as a society, we've said, well, you know, religion, not too sure we can do that, separation of church and state, so let's take that out of the equation. And morality, we're not even sure about whose morality, how to talk about that, so let's take that out of the equation. And what we're left with is only knowledge is necessary for good government and the happiness of mankind. And I have to ask, how's that working out for us? Not too well. Instead of this three-legged stool that they've said every generation needs to stand on for good government and a happy society, we've said, oh, no, just balance on this pogo stick of knowledge. And then we're shocked when they fall off. But why should we be surprised? And have you noticed? In the education world, everything is centered around just the right knowledge. If we can have just the right test, if we can have just the right measurement, if we can have all the right standards, then we'll have a great society. Then we'll have good government. And we've lost and forgotten the other two aspects of the equation the founders said was so important. And that gets reflected in everyday experiences like Isaiah Martinez. This idea that religion can't be in a public school. Isaiah was a first grader in California, and during the Christmas season, he wanted to bring some candy canes to his classmates. And so he got a bunch of candy canes, and he put a little note on there that talked about the story of the candy cane and his belief in Jesus, and Jesus, the reason for the season, and so forth. And he brought them to class, all excited to give them to his classmates. And the teacher took a look at it and said, well, wait a second. She went and checked with the school principal. Principal said, oh, yeah, you can't distribute that. She came back and said to Isaiah, no, Jesus is not allowed in our school. And then literally ripped off the notes, threw them in the trash, gave them back to Isaiah, and said, now you can pass out the candy to your classmates. Now, eventually, because an attorney intervened, the school did allow him to distribute those with the notes attached, but he had to do it after school, on public property outside the school campus, on the last day as students were exiting, going home for winter break. Now, what do you think? You know, in education, we talk a lot about more is caught than taught. What do you think Isaiah and his classmates caught there? That Jesus, or religion, specifically Christianity, is somehow offensive. It's not allowed. It's not appropriate to be expressed. He learned a poor civics lesson there. Somehow his faith can only be dealt with at home and in Sunday school, at church, but he can't express it to his friends. The thing is, Isaiah is not alone. According to Columbia University, in their surveys, they found 57% of teens attend religious services, and 44% do so weekly. That's amazing. Think about the millions of young people and children attending church at least two times a month, and oftentimes every week. Our classrooms are filled with students who come from a religious background, a religious orientation. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services in 2013 found that 73% of students ages 12 to 17 indicate that religious beliefs are a very important part of their life. Now, as public school educators, do we at all even acknowledge that? We talk about teaching the whole child, but I call it the hole in whole child. There's a hole there. We often talk about, well, it's not just their intellect, it's also their emotions and their social aspects, but we don't talk about their spiritual aspects because we're not sure how to approach that. But the fact of the matter is, most students coming into a public school environment have some religious orientation.
You're listening to a special edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Don't go away, we'll hear more from Eric right on the other side of this break.
Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here, inviting you to join my wife, Luana, and me on an exciting adventure. Next July 29th, we'll board Holland America's luxurious MS Uradam in Seattle for a 7-day cruise to Alaska. You'll be joined by other believers as we study God's Word and worship Him together in the midst of some of the most breathtaking beauty in all of God's creation. Alaska is truly awe-inspiring. From stunning wildlife such as humpback whales to the purple mountain majesties, America is known and loved for. You'll also hear the latest updates from Washington on the new Congress and administration. Come, fellowship, relax, worship, and explore with us on this memorable vacation experience that is sure to enrich your body, soul, and spirit. For more information or to book your Alaskan adventure, call 844-872-5155 or go to TonyPerkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that number is 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by the media telling you what to think? It is difficult to sort out what is true and what is false in the news. That's why Family Research Council President Tony Perkins writes a daily newsletter called The Washington Update. This daily email newsletter analyzes the most important events and topics at the forefront of the battles for religious liberty, the protection of life, and the defense of natural marriage, not only in Washington, but around the country. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from the latest election season news to underreported stories about both setbacks and successes in the fight for religious liberty, the sanctity of life, and marriage. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Visit frc.org/Washington-update today to learn more and subscribe. Again, that's frc.org/Washington-update.
James Treslow Adams once said that the American dream is that dream of a land in which life should be better and richer and fuller for everyone, with opportunity for each according to ability or achievement. In today's America, the success of that dream depends on more than just hard work. One must also abide by the government's belief system. Christian business owners Melissa and Aaron Klein have a simple and common belief: that marriage is between one man and one woman. For declining to contribute their artistic talents to the creation of a cake for a same-sex wedding, the Kleins were fined $135,000. Today, a clear legal conflict lies at the intersection of religious freedom and laws prohibiting discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and/or gender identity, which are being used to coerce and penalize small business owners. To read more stories like the Kleins and to learn more about the laws that prevent us from freely living according to our beliefs, visit frc.org/weddings.
Welcome back to this special edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld. If you're just joining us, we're listening to an FRC lecture titled Promoting Religious Liberty in Your Public Schools. President of Gateways to a Better Education, Eric Buehrer, is reasserting students' ability to share their faith and scripture in the public school arena. Let's go back to Eric now.
And teachers can create a welcoming environment that at least allows them to be who they are, to be whole people. And so what we're going to talk about today is how to create a welcoming environment in a public school for religious expression in the classroom. And we're going to look at four key things. And now these are four things that are very practical. I want you to come away from today's presentation and actually do these things in your local schools. Those of you who are joining us by webcast, I don't want you to just come away and go, well, that was really interesting. Wow, I didn't know they could do that. I want you to actually implement this in your local community because it'll be life-changing for the educators there and for the students there. The first thing is you'll need to step up and help clarify students' religious freedom. The second thing is celebrate Religious Freedom Day, and we'll get into what all that's about. The third thing you can do is encourage prayer in school. What? I thought prayer was thrown out of public school. Well, teacher-led prayer was thrown out of public school, but we're going to look at how you can encourage prayer, and I don't mean just prayer before a test. And then fourth, help educators move from fear to freedom, because most of them operated fear when it comes to this issue of religion in the classroom. And therefore, you know, they don't wake up in the morning, how can I repress the faith of a child? But they're so afraid of doing something that they're going to get criticized for that they end up repressing the faith of the children in their schools. Let's start by clarifying students' religious freedom, and let's start with the U.S. Department of Education. Here's the good news. For 21 years, the U.S. Department of Education has issued guidelines explaining students' religious liberties. Back in 1995, under President Clinton, Richard Riley issued guidelines on students' religious liberties, and they're beautiful guidelines. See, the way the federal government looks at it is, it's a matter of free speech and free association. You can speak to whomever you want to, including your maker, about whatever you want to, including your faith. It's a matter of free speech. And so in 1995, they developed these wonderful guidelines. They sent them out to every superintendent in the country with a letter saying, please give this wide distribution in your community to all the parents, all your teachers, and all your students. Then they updated it in 1998, and they sent it out again with another letter. Please give this wide distribution to all the educators, parents, and students in your community. And then, under the Bush administration, they updated it and sent it out again in 2003 to every superintendent in the country, again with a letter saying, please give this wide distribution to every parent, student, and staff member. Now, I'm all over the country giving workshops for teachers, and I always ask them, how many of you have received this information from your superintendent? Not a hand goes up. They never even heard about it. It's been there literally for 21 years. It would answer all these questions that people have about what students can and cannot do in their public school. But for lack of information, many educators end up suppressing students' religious freedom. If you go to the Department of Education's website, and we have a link to it, if you go to a landing page we set up for this lecture, gogateways.org/FRC, you'll see the link to the U.S. Department of Education's guidelines. And it's called Guidance on Constitutionally Protected Prayer in Public Elementary and Secondary Schools. It's really a poor name for the document because it deals with a lot more than prayer. It's all forms of expression, speaking, acting, and so forth. But you can download that. Let's take a quick look at the seven key things that are in those guidelines. First of all, students can pray. They can read their Bibles or other religious materials and talk about their faith at school. So if a teacher says, well, we're going to have 20 minutes of free reading time, pull out a book, whatever book you choose, and I want you to read silently for 20 minutes. If a child wants to open up his Bible and read his Bible, or a teen wants to open up their devotional and read that devotional, that's their prerogative. They can bring and read their Bibles. Now, if the teacher says, I want you to open up your English textbook, the student can't say, well, I know my religious liberties and I'm going to open up my Bible. No, that's not the assignment. The assignment is open up your English textbook. But if it's available, hey, you can read whatever you want for the next 20 minutes, or if they want to read it during lunch or during recess or whatever they want to do, they're free to do that. They can talk about their faith with their classmates. If they want to share with them about their faith during recess or lunchtime or just free time in the classroom, again, the teacher is not the one to get in the way of that conversation. They're not to pull out religious conversation as somehow separate and different from other types of conversation. The second thing is students can organize prayer groups and religious clubs and announce their meetings. They need to be treated equal. It's called the Equal Access Act. They need to be treated equal as any other non-curricular club. So if you have a Kiwanis club, if you have a fashion club, if you have chess club, things that aren't related to the curriculum, then you have to also allow for other clubs. It could be political, could be religious. And they have equal access to school newspaper, bulletin boards, intercom announcements. They need to be treated equally. Third, students can express their faith in their classwork and in their homework. Again, if it's appropriate to the assignment. We had a case come to us from Los Angeles. You know, out in Los Angeles, they have a lot of brush fires out there. And so this was a high school English class. And one year when they were having some significant brush fires close to where the school was, the assignment was write a personal essay about how you felt when you watch these fires on TV. And so one passionate student wrote about how it reminded her of that verse about God being a consuming fire. And she wrote about her burning passion for Christ. The teacher refused to even grade the paper or accept the paper because she dared to mention God.
You're listening to a special edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more from Eric right after this.
From the ruling to uphold Obamacare's individual mandate, to the ruling to redefine marriage, to the ruling that allows the government to seize a citizen's home, these are the many important decisions that the United States Supreme Court has made recently. But did you know that each of these three decisions was determined by a one-vote margin? The Supreme Court's decisions affect all of us, and it decides about 70 cases every year. Over the next 8 years, we could get as many as 4 new Supreme Court justices. Furthermore, these justices will have a huge impact on the sanctity of human life, religious liberty, and the size and scope of government, and even parental rights. Join Family Research Council Action as we work to ensure the confirmation of Supreme Court justices who will uphold the Constitution and simply apply the law as the founders intended. Become a member today at frcaction.org. That's frcaction.org.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
Welcome back to this special edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld. The public school arena is under attack. What can we do about it? Well, one way to protect our students is to know exactly what their religious freedom rights are. Let's continue our lecture from Eric Buehrer, promoting religious liberty in your public schools.
Clarifying students' religious freedoms. That's number one. It's been done for 21 years at the Department of Education, but it's not getting down to the local level. So what we've done is we put together a little pocket-sized pamphlet, looks like this. And it simply quotes the Department of Education. We decided, look, if it's not gonna happen from the superintendents that they're sending this all to, then let's give it to the individual students and parents and teachers so they have it in their pockets, in their purses, so that they can pull it out and take a look at what the Department of Education really says. The beauty of this is it's not our opinion, it's quotations from the Department of Education. Now, we have collaborated with Alliance Defending Freedom, and when you get a pack, and these comes in packs of 50, when you get a pack of these, Alliance Defending Freedom has donated their time to our Free to Speak campaign, offering to send a letter, a 6-page letter, to the school official of your choice. So if you get, say your church, you have 25 students in your youth group, and you want each one to take 10 and give them to their friends. So you want 250 for them, and you want 250 to put in the bulletins in your church so that all the congregation gets them as well. Then that would be 500 pamphlets. That would be 10 packets of pamphlets. Then you give us the names, and when you go to our website and you order these, then up will pop a window. If you order 10, up will pop a window with 10 places where you can put the names of the schools in there. We then send that on to the Alliance Defending Freedom, and they volunteered their time to write a personal letter to each of those school officials explaining from the Supreme Court angle, here's what the Supreme Court says about students' and teachers' religious liberties. Now, they don't send a threatening letter, and it doesn't say so-and-so in your community ask us to send you this letter. That would just make them paranoid and nervous. It just comes out of the blue. Hey, Mr. Smith, at this time of the year, At Johnson Elementary School, you may have questions about students' and teachers' religious liberties. Here's what they are, based on Supreme Court rulings. And it gives 6 pages of Q&A. It's a wonderful personalized letter, hand-signed, from Alliance Defending Freedom. So you have the pamphlets going out through the students, and then you have the letter going to the administration. It's a wonderful way to impact public schools. So if a church, for instance, orders 10 packs to have 500 for their church and their students, then they can give us the names of 10 schools, and that church can have a huge impact on all the schools in that community. Now, if, by the way, there's more, if you're with a church group that has a number of churches involved and you want to do this, we look to see if there's overlap of schools. And then we'll make sure every school gets one, but we'll also then find one that hasn't been included in the list, so your reach is even farther to make sure that all the different schools get at least one. So I encourage you to get involved with that and go to our website. The next thing I want you to do is celebrate Religious Freedom Day. Now, what is Religious Freedom Day? Well, since 1993, the president has declared January 16th Religious Freedom Day. It doesn't matter, Democrat or Republican, every president has called upon the nation to recognize and celebrate the religious liberties we have here in America. This is based on, the reason why it's January 16th, it's based on some legislation that Thomas Jefferson and James Madison put together in Virginia called the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom. And it was very influential in the development of the First Amendment just 3 years later. And so Congress decided and the president agreed, we want to proclaim and recognize this day, and it's been done since 1993. What we're calling schools to do is simply join the president in recognizing the day. We're asking also if you have any kind of connection with your governors, appeal to your governor's office to proclaim the day, Religious Freedom Day, for your state. We would love to see greater awareness for Religious Freedom Day. Now, on that day, we did a focus group with a number of school principals. And it was interesting, as we began talking about it, I could see they were getting nervous. I stopped, I said, wait, what are you getting nervous about? And they said, well, okay, so we're going to have to do a school assembly, and we're going to have all the different faith leaders there, and we're going to leave somebody out, and then it'll be offensive, and then it's going to be a headache, and we don't need another assembly. I said, wait. You don't need to include anybody's faith. Don't talk about anybody's faith. You talk about the principle of religious freedom. It's a civics lesson. You don't have to have an assembly. Just have the teachers say, hey, today is Religious Freedom Day, or if it's happening on a weekend, hey, coming up is going to be Religious Freedom Day. The president asked us to honor and celebrate the religious liberties we have here in America. Let's go over the religious liberties you have right here at school. Great opportunity to again revisit the issue of religious expression, helping those students understand the freedoms that they have. So, what can you do for Religious Freedom Day? Five things I recommend. Number one, tell your students about Religious Freedom Day. Number two, explain their liberties. Again, it's a wonderful opportunity. You should do it at the beginning of the year. Hey, here are the rules in our classroom. Here are the school rules. And by the way, my classroom is a safe place for you to express your religious values. You'll be affirmed. You'll be honored. You'll be respected.
You're listening to a special edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Thanks for joining us. We're taking a look back at a very important and educational lecture titled Promoting Religious Liberty in Your Public Schools. Don't go away. We'll hear more from Eric Buehrer right on the other side of this break.
Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here, inviting you to join my wife, Luana, and me on an exciting adventure. Next July 29th, we'll board Holland America's luxurious MS Uridam in Seattle for a 7-day cruise to Alaska. You'll be joined by other believers as we study God's Word and worship Him together in the midst of some of the most breathtaking beauty in all of God's creation. Alaska is truly awe-inspiring. From stunning wildlife such as humpback whales to the purple mountain majesties, America is known and loved for. You'll also hear the latest updates from Washington on the new Congress and administration. Come fellowship, relax, worship, and explore with us on this memorable vacation experience that is sure to enrich your body, soul, and spirit. For more information or to book your Alaskan adventure, call 844-872-5155 or go to TonyPerkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that number is 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
James Treslow Adams once said that the American dream is that dream of a land in which life should be better and richer and fuller for everyone, with opportunity for each according to ability or achievement. In today's America, the success of that dream depends on more than just hard work. One must also abide by the government's belief system. Christian business owners Melissa and Aaron Klein have a simple and common belief that marriage is between one man and one woman. For declining to contribute their artistic talents to the creation of a cake for a same-sex wedding, the Kleins were fined $135,000. Today, a clear legal conflict lies at the intersection of religious freedom and laws prohibiting discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and/or gender identity, which are being used to coerce and penalize small business owners. To read more stories like the Kleins and to learn more about the laws that prevent us from freely living according to our beliefs, visit frc.org/weddings.
One of the questions I often receive from our listeners is, what can I do right here in my community to make a difference? The answer? A lot. And one of the most effective ways to make a difference right where you live is by organizing and leading a culture impact team in your church. A culture impact team, or CIT, will help keep the members of your church both informed and engaged through a wide variety of tools that we can place in your hands. Go to cultureimpact.org today for more information and order a Culture Impact Toolkit. We can provide you with all the training and materials you need to keep your church informed, inspired, and engaged. It's all free, and we can send it out to you today when you visit cultureimpact.org. Invite your friends at a church to join you in setting up a Culture Impact team. We want to help you answer the question, what can I do to make a difference? So visit cultureimpact.org. or call us today, toll free, 800-225-4008.
Welcome back to this special edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld. If you're just joining us, we're wrapping up an FRC lecture titled Promoting Religious Liberty in Your Public Schools. President of Gateways to a Better Education, Eric Buehrer, is re-educating all of us on the rights of students and their ability to share their faith and scripture in the public school arena. Let's listen now to the conclusion of Eric Buehrer's FRC lecture, Promoting Religious Liberty in Your Public Schools.
So in conclusion, let's look at the four things that you can do, and I hope those of you who are watching through the internet will take away these four things and do these in your community this year. Number one, distribute the free to speak pamphlets. It's the simplest thing you can do. The kids are already at your church. Just give them the material they need to give them the freedom. I remember one student, a little guy named Nick, fifth grader in Washington State. And he got the free to speak pamphlet from his mom, and he was really bold. And there was an assignment that was appropriate for him to express his faith in, and he was pretty bold in expressing his faith. And as he was walking out the door that morning, his mom was a little nervous for him and said, well, Nick, are you sure you want to turn in that assignment? I mean, that's pretty out there, you know, with your faith. And he said, yeah, Mom, no problem. I got my free to speak pamphlet in my backpack. So it can be very equipping for students. Number two, celebrate Religious Freedom Day. Put it on the calendar for your church. Get ready to help the students understand what their religious liberties are and celebrate it in your community. Number three, if you're in one of those 34 states that have moments of silence laws, distribute the school prayer card and encourage your students to pray that prayer when they have that moment of silence. And fourth, encourage you to contact us about hosting a seminar in your community, because that's where we can really give them practical help with what they can do in their curriculum and in their classrooms. And it's wonderful when teachers walk in and they see one another, and because oftentimes a teacher feels all alone. And when they see others in the room, they get very encouraged and supportive. I remember, for instance, I was speaking at a church in Southern California and talking about all the things they could do in the public schools for a Sunday morning service. And afterwards, as often is the case, the person will come up and greet the the guest speaker, and you really couldn't have scripted this better. This gentleman comes up to me and he says, "I just retired from the Los Angeles Unified School District. And in my 30 years of teaching, I never knew I could have done all the things you said I could have done." And he walked away. And the next person in line was a young man who had tears in his eyes. And he said, "Eric, I'm a first-year teacher, and I've been so frustrated not knowing what I could do, and this changes everything." And you can be influential in changing everything for the teachers in your community and the students in your community as well. A lot of times we look at the public schools and we say, it's so huge and it's so entrenched and there's so many problems. How can we possibly make a difference? Remember, there are Christians throughout the system. They just need to be encouraged with being an influence where they are and making a difference where they are. I think of our founders when they looked at that huge task during the American Revolution. And I'm inspired by the words of Patrick Henry when, his famous "Give me liberty or give me death" speech. A lot of people haven't read the entire speech in it. I'd encourage you to read it. It's so inspirational. The revolution was about to get started. The colonies up in the north were already getting active. The year was 1775, and the Virginia legislature was meeting to decide whether they were going to throw their hat in the ring as well. And they were going back and forth about what they should do, and Patrick Henry rose, and he said these words, which are so appropriate for us today. He said, "They tell us, sir, that we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable an adversary, but when will we be stronger? Next week? Next year? Will we gather strength by inaction and irresolution? We are not weak, sir, if we make a proper use of the means which the God of nature has put within our power. 3 million people armed in the holy cause of liberty are invincible by any force our enemy can send against us. Besides, sir, we will not fight our battles alone. There is a just God who presides over the destinies of nations, and he will raise up friends to fight our battles for us. The victory goes not just to the strong alone, but to the vigilant, the active, the brave. Our brethren are already in the field. Why do we stand here idle?" And they joined them, and they changed the course of history. Ladies and gentlemen, our brothers and sisters are already in the field in their schools. Why do we stand here idle when we have the tools, the equipment, the information to help them move from fear to freedom and create faith-friendly public schools? Join with us. With God's guidance and grace, we too can change the course of history. Thank you very much. Yeah. Now we have some time for questions. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. Yes.
Can I actually start with one?
Sure.
Just quickly, and then I'll hand it off to you. Bethany DeMinn, student interns and lectures coordinator here at FRC. I actually was just curious, a lot of what you have spoken on is more of the offensive, sort of knowing what your rights are ahead of time and being prepared. And
yeah.
Obviously, FRC focuses on religious liberty quite a bit, and we have partnerships with ADF and other organizations like them.
Yeah.
What are some maybe quick suggestions you have if a student finds themselves in this position where a teacher says no? I think a lot of students just either, if they're older, they might just say, "Oh, okay," and then they don't even tell their parents. If they're younger, they might come home and tell their parents, but just suggestions for a family who might find themselves
sure.
in that position.
Well, number one, pull out the free to speak pamphlet and say, "Teacher, you might not be aware," and give them that information. I encourage parents to approach a teacher with a, "I thought you'd find this information helpful." Not in an attacking way, but a saying, "I think you'd find this helpful." If they do find themselves discriminated against because of their religious expression, yes, there are wonderful organizations like Alliance Defending Freedom, Pacific Justice Institute, Liberty Council, and so forth, that I encourage them to contact. And they can go to our website and find the contact information for those organizations, because they're willing to step in. And it's not always a hostile, "Oh, you got to sue the school." Most of the time, it's a simple clarification letter that the administrator has never understood what students' religious liberties are.
Mal Klein, Accuracy in Academia. If I could do a quick comment, then a question.
Sure.
Can I do that? Okay. The most unbelievable stat to me was not the 84% having kids in public school. It is the 50% of teachers who are church-going Christians. That was the surprising.
Yeah.
But my question is, the Faith and Freedom in Public Schools seminars you do, how many education schools have you reached out to and colleges with this?
We have this in last year. We reached about 3,000 students went through it. Universities will include it in their course of study, kind of like a textbook. They purchase access to the online program and they make it part. It's not a course in and of itself. It's simply a supplement to an existing course that the university has. About 3,000 a year. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, wow, it's so nice to know I've answered everybody's questions about these subjects. Yes, question down here.
If you could please stand. Thank you.
Hi, Todd Wiggins, Citizen, D.C. Happy to have heard everything you have to say. I think a lot of people will find it cathartic to know that there are some options that they can implement that are legal. But as you well know, the headlines are that there's more of a Islamic Muslim influence in how America is being perceived as being open to religious freedom from the Muslim standpoint. So do you anticipate conflict in terms of people expressing their feelings that may not necessarily be well coordinated with Christian viewpoints?
Well, I say welcome to America. Every religion has freedom of religious liberty and freedom of expression. So if you have a Muslim student in your classroom, or Hindu student, Buddhist student, Jewish student, they all have the equal freedom to express themselves when it comes to classroom discussions, homework assignments, free reading time. All of that applies across the board to every religious faith. And I don't think that we should say this is only for Christians or we only want Christianity to have that freedom in the classroom.
Hi, my name is Reverend Susan Taylor, and I'm with the Church of Scientology here in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
And just a comment first. Back in 1995, there was a large coalition of people who got together and published a little booklet. And I can't remember the exact name of it, but it was something like Religion in the Public Schools. Mm-hmm. And then after that, meeting with President Clinton and then the whole Department of Education thing. But as I've mentioned, it was a large coalition of various faiths that got together. So my question would be, is your seminars, which I think is awesome, be open to people of all faiths?
Certainly it would. Our focus is on how to appropriately address the Bible and Christianity. Because our experience is that a lot of teachers have no problem teaching about world religions, because that's very multicultural. But then when it comes to teaching about the Bible and Christianity, now that's violating the separation of church and state. So there's a lot of hesitancy about that. The other thing is, our focus as an organization is on the Bible and Christianity and helping students understand that and cherish that as America's Judeo-Christian heritage. And when people say, well, how come you don't include all the other faiths? It's kind of like saying if you were an organization that focused on algebra and you taught students and teachers how to teach about algebra and somebody coming along and say, well, how come you don't teach about calculus? Well, because we're focused on teaching algebra. That's what we do. And so that would be our seminar. But we're, of course, open to anybody who would like to come and learn what can be done in their schools. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Can you just explain real quickly how...
Wait for the microphone.
Can you explain how a person who wants to organize invite you to come and host a event would do so in a community? We're talking about multiple schools. How about just explaining that real quick?
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes, if you're interested in having us come to your community, then you can contact our office. If you go to the website there, gogateways.org/FRC, you'll see the information on how to contact our office. And oftentimes this is done through typically a coalition of churches that will come together and say, look, we want our schools to be more responsive and more sensitive to the issue of the Bible and Christianity, and we want to make sure our teachers are doing it right. You know, I find that a lot of schools do some good things. They actually go too far, and they do things that step over the line, and then they get slapped down for that, and everybody recoils and, you know, oh, this is terrible. I want to encourage them to do it right and to do it academically and do it with integrity, and they can do it in a way that is actually even more robust. I often will tell them, look, I'm for substance over symbolism. I mean, there's a time and a place for symbolism. Symbolism can be good. But I'm much more interested in substance and how does a teacher make it substantive and relevant to their academic subject in an appropriate way. And we show them both all the freedom they have and the limits and how to have integrity regarding those limits. So if they'll contact our office, then we're happy to schedule something like that in their community. And we call it a 2-for-1 day. You do the educator seminar in the morning, you do the parent seminar in the evening. Typically a coalition of churches come together to help make that happen. Then they can reach out to more schools and invite the teachers to come in. Yeah. Yes.
I have another one, sorry. My prerogative, right?
Yeah.
I actually was recently overseas attending a seminar in Israel and met students from, or young adults from all over the world who work in various ministry capacities, and met a young man from Denmark who actually goes with other young people into their public schools in Denmark to teach religion. And what they do is, because Denmark is so liberal, they are actually permitted to come in and present the gospel. Now, there are people of all faiths that come in and present their faith. I also have another friend who works in Australia with Youth with a Mission, and one of the things that they do is the same thing, go into schools and talk about Christ. My question is, to me, that was almost weirdly a hopeful thing, because I think that that is territory that for a long time has been taboo, but I think that as our culture continues to move in a more liberal way, that it's possible that we may get to that point, and that in my mind, that might actually be a hopeful sign. I'm curious what your perspective is on that.
My perspective is, I'm not familiar with Denmark's arrangement, but Europe often is the state church, state-sponsored church, and I think that's done a lot to actually kill religion in those countries because it's just part of the institution. I think it's much better in America where we have competitive, so to speak, making the case for your faith and attracting people to your faith. And so I think that the church here flourishes a lot more. I'm not for turning our public schools into Christian schools. There's a time and a place for that. And I had, for instance, a teacher ask me, he said, one of my kids wants to become a Christian. He's come to me and he knows I'm a Christian and he wants to become a Christian. What should I do? And I said, we honor parental rights, right? We respect parental rights. Absolutely, he said. Okay, then you don't want to do this behind the parents' back. What you want to do is call the mom, it was a single mom, call the mom and explain to her what her son would like to do. And if she's fine with that, would she be willing to meet you for coffee with her son? And they went to a coffee shop after school in the evening. Now he's on his own time, personal. And in front of the mom, shared, here's what being a Christian is, here's what the gospel is. And the mom's attitude was like, hey, whatever makes my boy a better boy, I'm fine with that. I don't have a problem with it. But in front of the mom was able to lead the boy to Christ, and he became a Christian. But see, that was done personal time outside of school, honoring parental rights, doing it up front. That's the right way to do it. What I'm against is when teachers feel like they're trying to sneak something in. And it's just, I think, inappropriate in a public school setting. There are lots of places where that can take place. It can take place in student clubs that are student-initiated, student-led. It can happen in after-school programs. It can happen in evening programs. But it also, on a personal level, a teacher needs to be very careful about that and work directly with the parent.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you enjoyed this FRC lecture, re-educating all of us on the religious freedom rights of all American students. We'll see you next time on Washington Watch. But until then, let's keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.